This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hello there and welcome to the Bite Size Business Breakfast. The very best bits of today's show from Monday, July the 26th. Going to kick off with Serena Kelly, a couple of COVID updates, also a few Olympic updates as well, because we have got UAE athletes in action today on Monday in Tokyo and the surrounding area. What else have we got for you? Really good interview with Steve Bryce of Standard Chartered. Now, he's their chief investment strategist based out of Singapore with a private bank, talking to us about what we can expect from the markets in the coming weeks and where to put our money. Going to be looking at some of the big corporate stories of the day. Good earnings from Armani. Good earnings from Snapchat as well. Remember them? Details on that from both Shruti and Thomas. And finally, focusing on the restaurant industry. Anecdotally, we'd heard that restaurants were very quiet over Eid in the UAE, basically because everyone's in Mykonos spending their money there. David Singleton is a restaurant expert, and he basically confirmed Tom's theory and says, yes, it's quiet at the moment, and he expects it to be quiet through to September. But then, of course, with things like the Indian Premier League cricket and, of course, Expo just around the corner, he does expect to see things picking up. All that to come. First up, though, as ever, here is Serena.
Ask Serena.
Morning, Serena.
Morning, guys.
Can we talk about the Emirates ID, first of all? Because you've been looking at something related to updating the Emirates ID that's quite important.
Yes, it's basically if you need to visit the Federal Authority for Identity and Citizenship, so they're the ones that issue your Emirates ID. If you're heading to any of their centres, you will need to be either fully vaccinated against COVID-19, as in two doses, or you will have to present a negative PCR test, can't be more than 48 hours old. So this comes into effect August 1st. It applies to anyone that's 16 years of age and above. So that is if you are visiting any of the Federal Authority for Identity and Citizenship centres, which will be important because obviously, with your Emirates ID, it is something that you can process online as well. But if you are visiting the centre, fully vaccinated, or you will have to have a negative PCR test.
Thank you very much indeed. Staying with vaccines and PCR tests, what are the numbers?
So this time last week, after more than 265,000 tests were conducted, you were looking at figures of 1,529. Yesterday, they announced figures of 1,528. That's after more than 232,000 tests were conducted. When it comes to total reported cases in the country, we're at 671,636, out of which 20,543 are active. Four fatalities were announced yesterday as well, and recoveries 1,491. And then if you're looking at vaccine distribution, still currently more than 16.4 million doses have been distributed of COVID-19 vaccine across the country. And you've got more than 68% of the UAE population is now fully vaccinated. 68.7% have had two jabs. 77.8% of the population have had one.
Thank you very much indeed. Now, a couple of other stories that you're looking at this morning. First of all, in the capital, Abu Dhabi, we've had a warning from police about an online scam.
Yeah, so they're actually warning residents of fake adverts online offering pets for sale or adoption. So most of the time, the person is looking for their victim who's looking to obtain a pet. They're asked to pay 1,000 dirhams up front for the pet that doesn't actually exist. Things to look for. They'll ask you to send the money through bank accounts or through licensed local and global exchange agencies. But what they're saying is if you do fall victim or you come across one that is clearly fake, you can report it anonymously. 800-2626 is the local authority's contact. And again, you can do that anonymously. But it just made me think about, because Richard, I know you've got pets, you've got dogs. Tom, do you have any pets?
I have three children.
No, not the kids. I'm sorry, just do you have any pet? No,
yes,
you don't.
I've got a couple of mutts and a feline thing.
But these were not obtained during the pandemic, were they?
Yeah.
You adopted during the pandemic?
No, I just nicked them.
No. You're not being serious today, are you?
The beach volleyball's today, on, Serena.
I know, and I'm interrupting today, it, yeah.
We got them from credible sources, of course.
No, I know, but was it during the pandemic or you've had them for ages?
No, they've been fixtures there for quite some time.
Because I was just wondering, with the warning from the Abu Dhabi authorities in the start of the pandemic, you did see a lot of people across the globe. You know, adoptions were on the rise because everybody was looking for companions.
Everyone needed what do they call them now?
Well, it's more like, I don't know, animal therapy. It's great, yeah. You know.
They've brought them they're at the Olympics. You know, there's an entire sort of, what do you call, it's not a herd
a room of
dogs.
Of puppies?
What's a collective of dogs? A pack.
A pack.
There's a pack of hounds.
Wolves?
That are there as support dogs. Support animals.
Yeah.
So they've been brought on by the Olympics. But that, yeah, a lot of people in isolation needed a little bit of help, didn't they? So
yeah,
they found
exactly.
It through animals. But that also, we saw the dark side of it, didn't we? Because we saw a lot of cat napping or nabbing and dog nabbing going on because people were stealing animals.
Oh, to source for clients.
Yes.
People looking for certain breeds, yes. I suppose. But it just made me think that with the authorities, with the warning, has, you know, the fact that you've had so many scams going on in different varieties, this is just another one preying on people's, not weaknesses, but currently during this time, you know, are people still looking to adopt pets? And the fact we're not going away, and my kids are already bugging me for another pet to have at home.
Can have ours if you want, Mom. We're away.
But it's because we're not travelling, so they're like, well, we're not going anywhere, Mummy, so can we get another dog? And I'm like, oh my goodness. But it's just, yeah, I just found that interesting.
Finally, talk to me about Eid al-Adha. You've been looking at the numbers for the UAE authorities and how busy they were over the period.
Sharjah police fielded over 24,000 calls during the Eid al-Adha holiday. Dubai police, more than 37,000 calls. More than 5,000 of those were non-emergency. And when it came to reporting accidents, traffic accidents being reported, most of them were due to tailgating and speeding.
But they all came from Mykonos, didn't they? My souvlaki is overdone.
Oh dear. But whilst everybody was enjoying their break, you did have all the local authorities out in full force support, making sure the public was kept safe. But yeah, interesting figures there from the local authorities.
That's Serena Kelly. Thank you very much indeed.
More details on the Air and News Centre app.
Other local stories that we're looking at today, Thomas. This one caught your eye and my eye. Train going through the Hadja Mountains. Well, soon.
Yeah. So they've completed the first of many tunnels through the Hadja Mountains.
Did you see this one, Serena? By the way,
no.
The tunnel through the Hadja Mountains.
Oh no, I haven't seen the image. I saw the story came up, and I haven't read it fully yet. But yeah,
it's incredible.
Wow.
It is really cool because, I mean, the Hadja Mountains are an immovable force. You know. They have been there for quite some time, and we've got the first of our tunnels that have gone has been bored. Do you bore a tunnel? Yeah, you do. You bore a tunnel through the mountains as part of the rail network, the Etihad rail network, yeah. That's been put into place, which is going to link all of the Emirates. No, I just really think it's a great achievement. It's good to see that rail still has a place. In the current thing, and I've got a soft spot for big industry, and I think this doesn't get much bigger than boring a hole through mountains.
But this is just one of many, isn't it?
This
is the biggest. This is almost 2 kilometres long, and they've finished the excavation works, and there's nice pictures, and it's a Chinese consortium, and they're all there celebrating. 14. How many bridges is it?
So 16 kilometres in all, once it's all done, 35 bridges, 32 underpasses, 15 tunnels. So one's done, I need another 14 now. It's
incredible, isn't
it? It is an extraordinary achievement, so well done to all the team there. And let's just hope, as Rich and I were saying a little bit earlier on, I like the idea. I've always liked the idea of getting on a train to get down to Abu Dhabi. I mean, the drive to Abu Dhabi is one thing. It can get a little bit monotonous every now and again. The alternative, bullet train, okay, great, I get it, you know, being there in 15 seconds or whatever it's going to take you. But getting on a train down to Abu Dhabi, to commute to Abu Dhabi, would be a nice way to do things.
Wouldn't it be lovely?
Yeah. You get your work done, Have a nice cup of coffee.
You have your gold class and everything, just like the metro.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
We stay with the markets now, joined on the line by an old friend of the Business Breakfast, Chief Investment Strategist at Standard Chartered Private Bank, based out of Singapore, is Steve Bryce. Joins us on Microsoft Teams. Morning, Steve.
Morning, Richard. How are you?
Really good. Thanks very much indeed. Looking forward to getting your thoughts on where we should be investing our money at the moment. But first of all, let's look at the bigger picture, because you and your colleagues at Standard Chartered have just put out your global outlook, your macro outlook. In simple terms, what's the key takeaway?
So obviously, we just sort of updated our growth forecasts for this year. So some downward revisions, but some upward revisions. So overall, looking at 5.8% global GDP growth this year after a 3% slump last year. So obviously, the reopenings we're seeing in the developed world, in the US and in Europe, are driving that, together with commodity demand being a big supportive factor as well.
You say that the two risk factors you're looking at, one of them, of course, is the Delta variant and COVID. The other one is inflation, though. Talk to me about inflation.
Yeah, so obviously we've seen a big spike in inflation for several reasons so far. So one of them is just pure base effects from last year. So obviously we saw a disinflationary shock from the pandemic. So that just reversing out has led to a jump. But there's also supply bottlenecks, rising shipping costs and rising wages due to temporary shortages in the supply of labour, we believe, have also led to a pickup in inflation as well. So, I mean, our view is that this is going to be temporary. So that's the central scenario, is that we won't see this be sustained over the next 12 months. And we probably see the peak already actually happening in the first half of the year. But obviously, that is a key risk, is if you get that wrong, then obviously then the Fed and other central banks will have to tighten policy. So instead of lifting their foot off the accelerator, they might have to slam on the brakes. So at the moment, we're looking at them to lift off the accelerator a little bit.
OK, fine. Well, it is a big week in the United States, isn't it? We've got a Fed meeting. We've also got arguably the biggest week of earnings in the United States with the tech companies reporting this week. As a chief investment strategist at Standard Chartered Private Bank, which one of those two is more important for you and your clients?
I think the Fed is probably more important. Obviously, the earnings are probably going to surprise on the upside, so look pretty positive from that perspective. But there is the risk of, that the Fed will sort of accelerate the tapering conversation. And I think that's probably the bigger challenge that people are watching out for quite closely this week. Our sense is they'll probably announce it, an actual formal announcement in December. But obviously, people will be very, very edgy until they know exactly what the Fed's going to say.
In terms of earnings, now, I know you're not going to give me buy-sell or hold recommendations on Google or Apple, but in general terms, another record high on Friday for US stock markets. It's a question I've been asking you for 15 years or so now. Is the US market overvalued at these levels? Are we in bubble territory, Steve?
So certainly, if you look at obviously price earnings ratios, price to book ratios relative to history, then the markets don't look cheap at all and look very expensive, in fact. But if you look at them relative to bond yields, and obviously bond yields have come down in recent times on the view that we're probably not going to get runaway inflation, then equities still don't look expensive. They don't look super cheap anymore, obviously, given the near 90% rally we've seen since the low in March of last year. But they're still not expensive. So we still think there's room to go. The only caveat to that really is seasonality is usually at its weakest for this 3 months. So from August through October, that is usually the weakest point. And obviously, we are getting to debt ceiling talks. We've got this Fed meeting. We've got the test of the vaccination and unlocking going on in the UK. So there's a lot of things that people could worry about, but certainly we'd be buying on dips should we see any dip.
And in terms of equities geographically, where are you most overweight or where are you most bullish? Are you looking at the United States? Are you looking at Europe? Are you more of a slant towards emerging markets, perhaps even China and India? Where do you see the greatest value within stocks?
So we're overweight the US and Europe at the moment, including the UK. So we believe that's where the most reopening is going to continue. We're going to see strong growth coming through, both in terms of economic growth and also in terms of earnings growth. Obviously, emerging markets a little bit further down the chain in terms of vaccinations. including in Asia. And the dollar has held up pretty strongly. So we'd really want to see the dollar break lower for Asia to be a more outperformance type environment. So at the moment we're overweight the US and Europe because of that reopening phase continuing.
A quick word on this China story, Steve. Mm. Hong Kong's down almost 3% this morning. It's a regulatory crackdown by the Chinese authorities on technology stocks at the moment. I know you've looked at this in some detail. How concerned should we be about this? And as investors, you know, your clients, you're the investment strategist, how can we play the China market at the moment?
Yes, obviously, clearly a very uncertain environment at the moment. So we've got geopolitical concerns and then we've got this regulatory risk, which seems to be trumping that at the moment. So I think there is still quite a lot of uncertainty and volatility likely to come through. Obviously, we've seen that in the education names, down as much as 70% on Friday, some of those names. So obviously, it's been a very significant clampdown. And you know, it just shows what the Chinese authorities really are focused on. They're not focused on corporate China, whereas in the US, they generally have been focused on corporate America. They are focused on trying to get the best outcomes for their people. And if you cross, if you're in the crosshairs of those objectives, then you can get into trouble pretty quickly. So I think that's the challenge. So we're not overweight China. We're certainly not overweight US, China tech at the moment. So if you what we're saying to clients is if you want to invest in China, then the industrial or the energy space is probably a better place to play.
We've got a couple of questions coming in this morning from our listeners, Steve. Someone writes in, it's more a statement than a question, but I'd like to get your thoughts on this. Someone says, do not promote high fee funds, please. As a strategist, do you have a take on this, whether people should be looking at low cost tracker funds or ETFs rather than actively managed funds, which tend to come with higher fees? Any thoughts on that, Steve?
I think it depends on what the value is that the fund obviously generates, right? So, obviously you don't want to pay for something that doesn't generate value. But if you can justify those fees through improved performance, then fantastic. Otherwise, yeah, the low cost options make more sense.
Adam writes in, what's Steve's view on Bitcoin?
So obviously, you really probably want to log into Elon Musk's Twitter account if you want to have a good short-term view on Bitcoin. Our sense is that we don't know how to value Bitcoin. That's the challenge that everybody's facing. So is it worth zero or is it worth 2 million? Who knows? But I think the point is it could be zero. Therefore, if you're going to play with cryptocurrencies outside of central bank currency, digital currencies, then we would keep the positions extremely small because it's obviously very speculative and actually pro-risk. So it's not like gold, which is a hedge. There's actually a decent correlation between equities and cryptocurrencies generally. So if you want to hedge your portfolios, gold's probably a more secure route.
Well, Bitcoin is up 11% this morning at $38,000. I have no idea why. Finally, Steve, let me ask you about Singapore, where you're based, major financial services hub in Asia as well. What's the COVID situation been like there? What is it like at the moment on the ground?
So obviously we've gone down into another sort of pseudo lockdown in recent times. So that's obviously frustrating a lot of people. But, we have seen a spike in cases. We're still above 100 a day at the moment in terms of cases, which obviously for a country this size is less than desirable. But it does seem to have peaked. So I think, we're pretty cautious here. And obviously, hopefully, we'll get out the other side pretty soon.
And in terms of the economy and the markets in not just Singapore, but that kind of Southeast Asian region for which Singapore is a hub, how are you reading that one at the moment? I did hear you on Bloomberg a couple of days ago saying it's not one of your top picks.
No, it isn't. I mean, Asia isn't one of our top picks anyway, right? But I mean, Singapore's doing okay, obviously, because it's very leveraged to the global economy. So with the global trade picking up, that's helping. Elsewhere in Southeast Asia, obviously, we've seen cases go up quite sharply in Indonesia and in Thailand. So it's a bit more challenging elsewhere in the region at the moment, trying to get vaccination cycle in full steam ahead. And that's obviously taken longer than anybody would have wanted. So, we think that emerging markets is probably going to be more of a H1 2022 story rather than an H2 2021 story.
Steve, we're out of time. We're going to have to leave it there, mate. Sorry to cut you off, but thanks very much indeed for joining us this morning. That's the voice of Steve Bryce. He is the Chief Investment Strategist at Standard Chartered Private Bank, joining us on Microsoft Teams from Singapore.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Flicking through the international newspapers, first of all, this morning, we have producer Shruti Rajendran with us in the studio. Morning, Shruti.
Morning.
We'll get to you in a second. And a social media platform that I kind of forgotten about that's making a comeback. But first of all, Thomas, you're upping the style stakes this morning with Armani.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit of all things Armani. Obviously, a bit of a bouncer on travel to Italy at the moment. We know that Armani sales over in the United States are very significant. And so it seems to be a little bit of a pandemic bounce for Giorgio Armani. Sales at Armani jumping 34% in the first half of this year. Those numbers mainly driven by China and the US, helping the sort of bounce back for Giorgio. Although they said they're still in a bit of trouble. And it could be next year before it fully recovers from the pandemic. Goals to return to pre-pandemic levels by 2022. Over 2 billion euros in direct consolidated revenues at the moment, according to Giorgio himself, who made the statement yesterday announcing its 2020 results and the trend for January to June. So luxury group consolidating net sales had fallen 25% last year to €1.6 billion, I should say. Most decline occurring the first half of 2020, obviously. But the Milan-based group now saying that they are seeing a little bit of boost in global sales. Is that because people are treating themselves? Is that because people are being forced to go back to offices? Or is it just because it's Armani? Remains to be seen. But they are looking to bounce back from the pandemic.
Armani's still private. Which strikes
me as extraordinary, isn't it?
It is, because yeah. Everything's owned by LVMH or whoever it is these days.
He's holding out, isn't he?
He really is.
Yeah.
Good on him. He must be 80 or more now. He's 87. He does look good, doesn't he?
Yeah.
If I'm 87, do I look like that?
Yeah, I'll tell you what. But he should do, shouldn't he? He's Giorgio Armani.
I guess he is. But yeah, he's got
a hotel. He drinks olive oil. He wears Armani.
He's got a hotel in the Burj Khalifa.
And he's a billionaire.
Morning, George. Good to hear from you. So that's Armani doing really well in terms of profits, or recovering in terms of profits. The reason, producer Shruti, I've asked you in is for another company that's doing well. And it's Snapchat. So the context is, it's a massive week for US tech earnings this week. We got Tesla tonight. I think we got Alphabet and Amazon tomorrow, Microsoft the day after, or whatever. I forget the precise order, but Tesla's tonight. It is the big week for tech earnings. But we had a few last week. Twitter did okay. Snapchat shares were up 24%. I'd kind of forgotten Snapchat existed with the rise of TikTok and Instagram stories. What's the deal with Snapchat, millennial producer Shruti Rajendran?
Well, I have to hold my hand up and say I don't use it either, but right. I don't want to be... I mean, I'm not as influential as Kylie Jenner. Kylie Jenner was the one who started it all. I would say kind of the downfall of Snapchat initially, because she said, does anyone still use it? And then the shares obviously fell overnight. But then Snapchat...
That was 3 years ago.
Yes. But slowly Snapchat has sort of got its foothold back again. And I think a lot of young people use it because Snapchat still has the ability that, you know, you can send a photo for a certain amount of time and then it disappears. If you take a screenshot, the person who sent it will know that someone's taken a screenshot. So I think people use it for that. And another feature which I was reading about is that it has this your location setting. So you don't have to specifically, you know how Apple has find your friends, or you know, you can follow your friend's location. With Snapchat, you can just have that on. So if someone's going somewhere, like maybe they're traveling or they're going somewhere, they can just leave that on and their friends can track them irrespective. Like they don't have to get a special app or anything. So it's also a safety thing that young people are using it for. Young people.
You've now become the person who talks about young people.
Yes.
How old are you?
31.
Oh, blimey. What about producer Isa? Is she on Snapchat? No, she's not either. So who is on Snapchat? Because they have done well, joking apart. Snap went public back in 2017, 4 years ago. $24 billion valuation. It has struggled since then. Instagram stories launched and kind of ate Snapchat's lunch in terms of things that are only there for a short amount of time. Then TikTok came along and again ate a bit more of its lunch. Kylie Jenner famously tweeted, "Does anyone use Snapchat anymore?" But second quarter revenue this year, setting a new record for Snapchat, $982 million. These are advertisers. These are the Nikes and the Spotify's of this world spending good money on Snapchat. So somebody, you're not using it, Eyes is not using it, but is someone using it? Is Fade using it?
I think it's between 17 to 24 is sort of the sweet spot for Snapchat. And when I was using it, I think until about 3 months ago, the ads were more targeted towards things like, you know, not that expensive cosmetic brands, or like you mentioned, Nike and Adidas, like proper the trendy sports shoes and the sportswear, that sort of ads were the ones that were cropping up on Snapchat.
Good on them. Apparently last month it went viral for its cartoon 3D style lens, which makes you look like a character in a Pixar movie. Fair enough. Evan Spiegel, the founder, says they're doing all right. Tom, are your lot using Snapchat at all, or have they moved on?
I don't think so. I think they certainly were using Snapchat. They're more TikTok. Well, the youngest is TikTok. Maybe the other two are on Snap. I don't know. I don't speak to them much. So.
Fair enough.
I'll put it on the list of things to ask them during August. Yeah.
How did you do at maths this year?
What year are you in?
Are you being bullied? Are you on Snapchat? And the talk, obviously.
That's long gone.
South Korea, Shruti Rajendran, and the Olympics. There has been a faux pas. We know you're a big fan of all things South Korean pop culture. What's the deal here?
Yeah, this I don't think is sitting very well with the people or with me. It's, you know, when the opening ceremony happened and, you know, the contingent of athletes walked in, a South Korean broadcaster, NBC, no relation to the NBC here or, you know, in this region, but what they did was they put a series of photos when these athletes were walking in. So, for example, when Italy was walking in, they put photos of a pizza.
Okay.
When Norway athletes were walking in, they put a salmon. But then it got worse. And when Ukraine walked in, they put a photo of Chernobyl.
Okay.
And so on. There was mentions of Haiti, Syria. I don't need to go into details, but it was...
Romania got a Dracula.
Dracula,
didn't they?
Yes. So people are upset over it, rightly so, and now NBC have come out and apologised for it, but I feel like it was a joke taken too far.
I don't know. I think they're just trying to make it a bit more engaging, because by all accounts, Tom, it was you politely gave it a C grade yesterday, but I don't think you really...
It wasn't the greatest entertainment, the opening ceremony. And the opening ceremony is always a little bit of a weird one, isn't it? Because obviously it's got a lot to do with your broadcaster. You know, the BBC go to town on it. Hazel Irvine and what's his name, the other bloke who does it with Andrew Scott. And it's all about the script that you've prepared, because every time a team comes in, so obviously you get given a running script of what each of the interpretive dances are meant to represent, and the lights and the creations, etc. But then as the countries come in, it's up to you. So you can give your own little facts. And it seems to be that every broadcaster tries to outdo each other with the weirder facts about those countries, etc. NBC got this one wrong, though. I like the Marshall Islands one. It described Marshall Islands as once a nuclear test site.
And for El Salvador, they actually put Bitcoin because it's a legal tender there.
I think it's brilliant. I'm with the South Koreans on this one. Producer Shruti, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast.
Tear myself away from the beach volleyball for a moment to focus on all things hospitality. So, going to be looking at how local hospitality has fared during the Eid holiday, what prospects are like for the rest of the summer holidays as well. Good times, bad times. I want to get the thoughts of an expert on this one. We're going to be talking to David Singleton. David's a partner at Socius Group. He's also the founding board member of the Middle East Restaurants Association, which is a non-profit organisation set up to help connect, promote and support the region's restaurant industry during these tough times. So we've spoken to him during the pandemic as well. He's worked in hospitality and retail in the region. Sweden, across the state, South Asia, as a brand builder, creator, operator, franchisee and franchiser for some of the world's best known and respected brands. He joins us live on the line, and good to see him live on Microsoft Teams as well this morning. David, good morning to you.
Morning, Tom. Good to see you. Sorry to drag you away from the volleyball.
It's right. Still got it here, mate. I'll keep you updated on the scores. Don't worry about that. Listen, okay, you and I caught up last week. We were sort of taking a little bit of an overview of the industry as a whole. We are out and about at a venue around town. I hope the venue themselves don't mind us saying that, you know, it was a little bit quiet and that prompted the conversation. I mean, have things been quieter than usual during what should have been a busy e-break for restaurants here? And if so, why so?
Yeah, no question at all that it has been quieter. And I think some operators are experiencing significant double-digit declines over the last week or so. You know, anything from 20% to 50% into the red. And what we haven't been having, Tom, is the inbound tourism, you know, with the restrictions, the understandable restrictions from around the world. But there's no question this has been challenging. And when you go over to the border in Abu Dhabi, they've had their restrictions in place over the week as well. 10 p.m. closures, the mall restrictions, cinemas, etc. So it hasn't been a great week for a lot of the industry.
That's an interesting insight. So obviously nothing untoward with a number of people leaving for an Eid break or getting away for a longer extended summer break. But ordinarily that would be consolidated with people coming in. But without those numbers, we're really seeing the difference.
Yeah, and also, I just use my daughter as an example, Tom. I mean, she wanted to get back to the UK to see the folks, but she had to take a couple of weeks in another country, the poor love, in order before she went to the UK. So it could have been that she could have had a staycay, which she would have done here, got over her school, you finished breaking up from term, going on a staycay here, and then going straight into the UK. But she went and spent some time in Spain and then on to the UK. So she's gone for 5 weeks, as it would be normally 3 or 4 weeks. So I think that's a typical example where people are, you know, we see the Mykonos invasion, haven't we? But it's not just Mykonos, it's Georgia, it's Serbia, it's Seychelles as well. Mykonos seem to have been grabbing the headlines, I think, at the moment. Well, unfortunately, he's not DIFC.
What about spend, though, Dave, in terms of spend per head? I mean, if people have been, you know, starved of travel, are they splurging a bit more on their holidays and their spend out and about than they would be here in restaurants?
I think it's more spread out, Tom. I don't think people have got any more money to spend here in the region. Mm. I think here we've been blessed in that we have been allowed to really safely do what we want to do, as opposed to other countries. I mean, you and I from our home country back in the UK and other parts of Europe, where people have been more restricted in their travel and entertainment, so they do have more expendable income at the moment. Whereas we've been able to carry on pretty much as normal, I think is fair to say. Whereas I know my folks back home and in other parts of the world, you know, that they've got it in the bank and they are splurging. They are going out and spending it. Also, they are seeing peaks in spend. Not so much here.
Obviously, okay, so if that's stacking up for restaurants and hospitality, what's your sort of finger on the pulse intel tell you about retail spaces at the moment? Have malls benefited or not?
Yeah, it looks like in the last week or so that malls have been busier. I've ventured out and been busier. Retail spend has been better. Luxury particularly, I'm hearing, as in the last 10 days has been very good. But it's very hard to get a number really where people are spending in the luxury boutiques as to how much they spend in F&B. Not a lot of correlation there. And it has been something that's been frustrating me over the years.
Okay, so we're sucking up for the next couple of weeks. Obviously, more and more people coming back from Eid breaks as well. But as you say, more and more people away on extended summer breaks. Tough times until the end of the month.
Yeah. I think so, Tom. I think I think schools are coming back a little bit earlier this year, and so I think we are going to see this perhaps for the rest of August, and it's August next week, can we believe it? I think August is going to be a challenging month where we hunker down, and then as the world comes alive here, September, I think we're going to see an uplift, and then of course the long-awaited expo and the exhibition market will hit us again, and hopefully Q4 back here in the UAE will start to pick up again.
In terms of appetite and demand, excuse the pun whether it comes to appetite, but from what you're hearing from international brands looking to expand portfolios here in the region, is that a prospect of growth, not in the next couple of weeks maybe, but certainly towards the end of the year?
Yeah, very much, Tom. I mean, that's a lot of my work at the moment is, you know, where I advise on global growth strategy. And I'm seeing a real movement in that. In fact, tonight I'm hosting a group of investors from Russia who are coming down. And these are my former colleagues when I was out there. They're coming down, four of them, to seriously look at investing in this market, USA, UK, and also startups as well, Tom, where, you know, I call this the age of the entrepreneurial generation now, where some of the young investors see opportunity here within the crisis. So, yes.
That's good news for a number of people looking ahead to time after the summer as well. One other little sort of trend I want to get your thoughts on, David, because we have spoken a lot here on the show and also seen the growth of the dark kitchen in recent times. A phrase I'm not too enamoured with, because I think it's all too a bit Marvel and heroes, etc. But is that a risk to the restaurant industry per se or not?
It depends how you look at it, Tom. I mean, tech-enabled food, as I call it, is something I've been working on a fair bit recently. It's here to stay, and I think if you look at the last 18 months where eating out habits have really, really changed, you know, we've learned to stay at home again and socialise at home, and even the best of the restaurants here at the high end are delivering into our homes now. So tech-enabled food is here to stay. It's how we embrace it, and it's going to be a very interesting few years, months and years ahead of us. Again, tomorrow I've got a fascinating meeting where a dark kitchen, you know, is asking me to go out and bring brands in from around the world into this sector. So it's here to stay. It's how we embrace it.
David, always good to catch up with you. Enjoy the rest of your summer, my friend. David is a partner at the Socius Group, talking all things restaurants with us.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.